Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There's a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. This is the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast, episode 50. Welcome back, my friends, to the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and this is the podcast dedicated to a successful life as a small firm architect. Whether you have plans to someday start your own firm, or you're in the process of launching a startup, or you're an experienced small firm architect just trying to make a difference, this podcast is for you. My goal is to inspire you to build a better business so that you may pursue your purpose with passion and live the life of your dreams. Last December, I was invited by the American Institute of Architecture students to join them in Chicago and speak at their annual national convention forum. If you recall last December, it was extremely cold throughout the U.S. and snow was covering much of the nation. And it was during that event and while waiting for the airports to dig out and start allowing flights to resume departure from O'Hare once again, where I had the opportunity to speak with many students of architecture. And we discussed their future and their plans and their ambitions. And it was during this event when I realized that many of the issues that we discuss here at Entrepreneur Architect are also serious concerns for our next generation of architects. How will they find jobs? Will they be paid what they're worth, both as interns as well as when they become licensed professionals? How will they start their own businesses? Will they be respected for the skills they have and the talents they possess? Will architecture actually be a profession that they'll be proud to call their own? Today on the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast, I have the privilege to be speaking with a man that may have some answers for those students. As a former assistant director of the Intern Development Program, also known as IDP, and the National Council of Architectural Registration Boards, also known as NCARB, and he's the new executive director of the American Institute of Architecture Students, Nick Surface is in a very, very unique position. As a project architect earlier in his career, as a member of the board of directors for his local Richmond, Virginia chapter of the AIA, and leading the way on both sides of IDP, Nick has a perspective of the profession that few others possess. And I'm so happy that with many dedicated student leaders, he is guiding the AIAS, and I am honored to have him here today as a guest. Nick Surface, welcome to the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast.
Thanks, Mark. Thrilled to be here and excited to be here in this new position as well. So hopefully we can provide some good insight into where the organization stands today and maybe talk a little bit about the design leaders of the future that are coming through the ranks right now and how they can kind of get a leg up through the AIS and what the AIS can do for the profession as well. So again, I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, that'll be great. Before we get into all of that fun stuff, what I'd like to do is start with your origin story. When did you know you wanted to become an architect? So start way back and tell us the story, your journey from that point to where you are today.
Sure. Well, for me, it was a decision much later in my career than for most in architecture. My undergraduate work was in something called foreign affairs. I actually only took one architecture course my senior year of college. It was a 200-level history course, second half of it. It was an elective, and I remember it was the last exam I took before I graduated. And I remember walking out of that course thinking, you know, that's too bad. I'm never going to get a chance to do that again. But I went out and I started working, and I got a job at a large corporate law firm in the litigation department, because when you have a foreign affairs degree, that's kind of the main options is, you know, law firms, law school, or politics, something like that. I got out and started working, and I thought I might go to law school eventually, but I was speaking with a young attorney one day, and he was in his second year at the time, doing really well for himself, making a six-figure salary. But we were talking about my future, and he mentioned that he actually calculated his hourly wage based on the amount of hours he worked for his first year at the firm, and it came out to $3.69 an hour. So it was at that point I decided I needed a more lucrative career than what the law could offer me. So the running joke is that now I switched to architecture, which I'm still waiting for that to return dividends. But no, in all seriousness, I wanted to give back and have a career that was a little bit more creative. And then I thought maybe gave back a little more, you know, to the greater good. So I went back to architecture school. I did a 3.5-year MArch at the University of Miami down in Coral Gables. Had a great time, but ended up coming back to Richmond, Virginia afterward, which is where I'm from, and started working for a large local firm doing healthcare design. Had a great experience there, and what one of the primary benefits of that experience was the opportunity to get a lot of hands-on experience really early on. I was out on site a lot, got to meet a lot of contractors and engineers and clients, and do a lot of that construction administration work. And it really helped me go through the internship program and the licensure process fairly quickly. And once I was able to earn a license, I moved right into a construction administration role. So I started, again, back out on site, clients, contractors, architects. And that's where I think I really excelled. Having come at this profession a little bit laterally, I don't always feel like I have the design sense or the creativity or the artistic talent that many others do. So I put my skills to work out in the field, and that seemed to pay some dividends. Through that, I started leading an in-house group of folks, doing some mentoring, that type of thing. The firm ended up winning an IDP Outstanding Firm Award back in 2007, and that's how I got plugged into the whole world of NCARB and started to do some volunteering with them, and met some of the folks at the AIA and really started to get involved. And that led to the position at NCARB, which primarily worked on outreach to colleges and universities, explaining the licensure process, explaining how IDP works, giving out ARE tips and tricks and study strategies, and talking about the architecture career as a whole. That was over the last 6.5 years, which naturally led me to this position at the AIS. I've had a lot of involvement with AIS over the past year through quad conferences and forum and their grassroots conference. And so for me, it was a natural fit, and I'm finally excited to be here now. I've been here for about 3 months, and so far so good, I think. And hopefully this is the first step towards a lot more content coming out of our office, hopefully a lot more FaceTime for not only myself, but some of the staff members here, as well as our president and vice president. So I think that kind of rounds it out.
Yeah, that's a great story. So when you decided that when the position for executive director for AIS became available, what was the one thing that sort of led you to that position?
Well, to be honest with you, I received a text about it on a weekend. And I remember thinking at the time, wow, I need to get out of the house and go to the gym and think about this. So it's always been something that's been on my horizon. It's always seemed like a natural extension of what I was doing at NCARB. At NCARB, I was focused on just the licensure process and that whole route through the career. But the opportunity to move to the AIS gives me a much broader perspective. It gives me a chance to engage with students on a variety of levels and on a variety of topics. And it essentially makes my career and my job entirely focused on students, which I think is pretty cool and has always been one of the most unique aspects of my work at NCARB and one of the aspects I enjoy the most. So for me, it was just a natural extension and a natural next jump.
When I was in Chicago at the AIAS Forum, I was really impressed with the student leaders that I met. And then again, when I was in Chicago for AIA convention, Charlie Kletcher, the current AIAS president, invited me to a meeting with him and his board. And I got to meet, you know, all of the board that, or many of the members of the board that were there. So it looks like you have a fantastic group of student leaders to work with.
Yeah, I really feel like I couldn't have come in at a better time. As you mentioned, Charlie Kletcher, the current president, as well as Obi Okolo, the vice president, are fantastic leaders. Both come at the organization with very different perspectives. Obi Okolo, the vice president, has worked with the organization for several years in a volunteer capacity and a leadership capacity. So he brings a lot of historical and institutional knowledge. Charlie Kletcher kind of comes at it from a little bit of a different angle. He's been a member for a lot less time, but is seeing it with a fresh set of eyes. So he provides some new insight and perspective. And Charlie also has a good deal of professional experience. He is one of those three-year MARC folks. So he had a good deal of work with set and stage design and concert set and stage design. So that kind of provides a unique element and perspective as well. So I feel like it couldn't be a better year to start this journey and with the leaders, both at president and vice president, as well as many of the chapter leaders and our board of directors.
And so I'm assuming that you're gearing up for Nashville. Nashville is the city where this year's forum is going to be held. What's going on at AIS now at a national level, and what's really planned for the future?
Sure. Well, right now, what we're trying to do is create a solid foundation in which we can start to launch new programs and new campaigns and new items for member value. So for a while, the AIS has kind of moved along consistently with some rather consistent and consistent programs from year to year. Crit is our magazine. We've always had Forum, which is our annual meeting in the wintertime. We've had a grassroots leadership conference. But what we're trying to do now is to try to get some of our foundations in place, our communication strategies, our partnership strategies, our membership strategies, so that we can really start to grow. We can maybe add new programs, expand these conferences in new ways, and maybe bring in some new partners that provide fresh benefits to some of our members. So again, we're looking to establish the foundation so we can create new and fresh items for our members and increase value.
When I went to Forum, my perspective of architecture students changed. It had been a while since I was at a Forum, and it's been a long time since I interacted with students. I'm wondering if there, from your perspective, should there be a more formal integration or at least an interaction between the AIA and the AIAS so professionals and students can come together, you know, more formally, so those interactions that I had with students can happen on a more regular basis with other professionals as well.
Absolutely. To me, it's a natural fit to increase and enhance that relationship between AIAS and AIA. Here at the national office, that relationship already exists at a pretty strong level. The AIS is actually located within the AI building, and we do a lot of coordination and collaboration here at a staff level. However, I'm not sure that always extends to the local level, which is what we're trying to expand upon. We have, of course, our chapters all over the country, many of which have AIA components nearby. And there's a mutual benefit for both organizations, and I think some greater communication and coordination at the local level could certainly help the members and increase the programs and benefits available and really expose, you know, the AIS members to, you know, what's going on in the profession and maybe bridge that gap a little bit better between academia and professional life. And so what we're doing at a national level is trying to figure out ways in which we can increase that communication and coordination and kind of support the local chapters in their outreach to the AIA components so that there's, again, an opportunity for mutual benefits to be shared by both. But I think you hit it on target. I think it's a natural fit, and I think we just need to work on enhancing that relationship and the opportunities for communication and collaboration.
Yeah, I think it would be very beneficial for professionals to see what happens at Forum. Because when you're in that big room with 1,000 architecture students who are so optimistic and so energetic about the profession, it gets me as a professional really excited about the profession I'm in, and really excited about the future of the profession. And so I would encourage any architects who are listening to interact with some of the AIAS students, whether at a local chapter level or on a national level, maybe attend a forum. And also the other way around, I would love to see more architecture students attending AIAA convention. This year it's in Atlanta. Last year it was in Chicago. I did see some students at the convention last year. It would be great to see a more formal invitation by the AIA to have architecture students join them at the convention and see what's happening at a national level and really feel the respect that professionals have for students.
Yeah, at the AIS, we always say that we're trying to increase our members' ands. And what we mean by that is, well, in architecture school, they learn all about architecture, but through the AIS, they can add other things. So marketing and project management and design office management and, you know, graphics and leadership and all that type of thing. And one of the ways we can really expand our members, you know, quote unquote, ands is through our events. That's, again, Forum, promoting AIA National Convention, and even some of the local AIA conventions. We have a chapter up in Rhode Island, Roger Williams University. They're really doing a good job promoting ABX, which is a kind of a regional conference in Boston, to their members. And several other chapters around the country are doing the same. And it's really at those events where I think we're best able to add to our members' ands. We're able to expand their network, expand their skill set, introduce them to people that they would have, you know, otherwise not been able to meet, you know, introduce them to even vendors and materials and that type of thing, and give them access to educational sessions, which are, you know, well beyond what they're hearing and seeing on, you know, on campus. And it gives them a greater perspective too. And, you know, to touch on what you were saying about professionals, you know, our doors are always open as well. I'd love to take a fresh perspective on our conferences and blend in more professionals so that it's more of a mutual engagement rather than just a student conference. It's a chance for everybody to get together and, you know, and meet and interact and work towards the same goals of bettering the profession.
Yeah, our professionals can also volunteer to speak at Forum. You have programs and seminars that are offered to the students, and that's how I ended up. I was invited by the organizing committee to come down and both speak at the conference as well as present a seminar on business and architecture. So that's an opportunity for any professional. If you have something to say and something to share with students, give them a call and tell them that you're interested in working with them.
Yeah, absolutely, Mark. Our schedule for our conferences is, you know, pretty much a blank slate pretty late in the year until we really gear up for it. And we're always looking for new sessions and new perspectives and speakers from the profession itself who have, you know, gone out and become subject matter experts of their own. So, like you said, if anybody is interested in speaking at one of our conferences, by all means, please reach out to us. We'd love to hear from you. And frankly, we're trying to find you. We're just not always sure where to start. And that's part of the reason why I'm really excited about being on this podcast, because I think your audience, Mark, in particular, is a real draw for our membership. One of the things I've been doing is reaching out to the chapter president since I've been on board and trying to find out what, you know, we could do to enhance the organization. And they keep coming back to this concept of bridging the gap between, again, academia and the profession. And it's that business side of architecture and design that a lot of them feel they don't necessarily get in their standard curricula. So having people from your audience in particular, Mark, I think would be a huge benefit to us. So if anybody is listening, I would encourage you and hope that you would please reach out to us, because we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, that's great. And I don't want to let it slip by that you gave a shout out to Roger Williams, because that's my alma mater. And that is a very active group, and I was president of that chapter when I was at school, and so I was proud to see them at Forum, and I'm proud to see what they're doing up in Boston. And they invited me in February to come back to Roger Williams and speak, so I'm looking forward to that as well.
That's right, Mark. You know, I did know that you went to Roger Williams, but I didn't make that immediate connection right there. So I promise that was genuine.
That's good. It sounded genuine, so I'm glad to hear that. Let's get into IDP a little bit.
Sure.
You have lots of experience with IDP, traveling around the country and kind of presenting the program to students. I know that they've announced several very big changes in the last year or so. Could you sort of give a summary of some of those things that are changing at IDP?
Sure, of course. So one of the primary changes, and this is the most immediate change, is that IDP is currently set up to require interns to earn 5,600 hours. That's approximately 3 years. That 3 years is broken up into two different ways. Approximately 2 years is in core hours. So that means specific hours that need to be earned in specific areas, and then there are minimum amounts in those areas. The other year is elective hours. So essentially, it could occur in any area of IDP. Well, what NCARB is implementing is a program whereby we move from that 5,600 3-year mark to a 3,740 2-year mark. And in order to do that, they're essentially removing those elective hours that I just mentioned. So the hours that could come from any area of IDP are now being wiped clean, and the program will just be those core hours. So what you need to do for IDP is just the core hours in the core areas, and then you'll be done. So that's a pretty significant move. And hopefully should lessen the time to licensure, but still maintains the rigor of you know what those core requirements are. The second phase of the change, which is not as immediate, I believe there's a little bit of a time lag in terms of when this will happen, but IDP is currently set up into 17 different experience areas. Things like programming and construction documents and construction administration and leadership and service. Those 17 areas are being condensed to 6. And hopefully that makes the program a little bit more workable and usable. And those 6 areas will align with the new 6 divisions of the ARE as well, which kind of brings everything into alignment. However, on the IDP side, of course, those 6 areas will focus on tasks and knowledge and skills and you know activities that are performed in the office. Whereas on the ARE side, they're obviously testing your specific knowledge of topics and subjects. So there'll be a little bit of a different angle from each side, but again, at least focused on the same 6 areas, which I think is a fantastic move. The last thing I want to mention that NCARB's kind of been promoting and working toward is this licensure upon graduation concept. They recently put out an RFINI, it's a request for information and interest, to schools across the country that might be interested in creating a new program for schools to create licensure upon graduation. Now, the licensure upon graduation concept could be achieved in a variety of different ways, but in whichever way it's achieved, it's still intended to be an alternative to the existing program and still include education, internship, and exam in some way. It's just essentially a consolidation of all those 3 elements. So again, to summarize, you have the consolidation from 5,600 hours to 3,740. That's 3 years to 2 years. You have a move from 17 areas to 6 areas in terms of which areas you need to earn experience in, and a push towards licensure upon graduation.
Wow, those are some major changes happening. I've heard mixed reviews from the professionals on some of those changes. Many very positive, exciting thoughts, and then there's some that feel that it's not the right move. But I think you have that in any issue that comes up in this profession. You have people who are for it and who are against it. One of the questions I have for you, because it keeps coming up in my community, because many of us small small firm architects and sole practitioners are working now remotely, which is how I have my studio now. My studio is a virtual studio. My staff is working remotely in their own studios. And I have a 200 square foot space here, so I don't have a place, and it's in my private home, so I don't really have a place for an intern to come and work in my space. What I was wondering is there the ability to have virtual firms and have a remote intern, and they can still earn their IDP credits, but not working in direct, you know, in my direct location? Is that possible? And if so, how do you do that?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And as you mentioned, Mark, I think the mobile workplace is just a reality that, you know, if organizations haven't adopted it yet, I mean, it's certainly coming down the pike. And I think more and more companies and organizations are feeling comfortable with that scenario. I'm intimately familiar with it myself, and I found it to be extremely successful. And it's not just virtual. It's, you know, everybody's traveling a lot more and trying to get out more and you know, do the face-to-face contact. And that requires, you know, a mobile workforce. So with that said, yes, that type of arrangement is absolutely acceptable for IDP. IDP is governed by something called direct supervision. You know, there's a lot of questions sometimes about employment relationships or locations and, you know, all the details of how a job works. But really, IDP just relies on direct supervision. And it's a very specific definition. And one element of that definition is that it requires personal contact. And by personal contact, they mean, you know, either day-to-day in the office or remote contact. So that could be via Skype or via Google Hangout or via consistent conference call. The intent is simply that the intern and their direct supervisor have a touch point from day-to-day in terms of what they're working on. That's a change that happened a few years ago with IDP, and it was a proactive reaction to or a proactive stance towards the changing workforce. So that's absolutely okay. The way that it works is very similar to the standard process. Since everything is online now, the intern simply goes in, puts in their information, clicks submit, and it gets an instant email over to the supervisor. So where and, you know, what time things are occurring is really irrelevant anymore. You could certainly have an intern in California and a supervisor in, you know, in New York, and that worked just fine. And again, it seems to be the increasing nature of how we do business, so it just makes sense.
This is another question that has come up. So that's a great answer. So I think that answers the question of many of my audience. The other question that comes up related to that is, do interns need to be employees? Do they actually have to be employees of the firm, or can they be consultants to the firm?
Sure. So this is one of those situations that NCARB, at least when I was there, we would hear these scenarios in different fashions pretty frequently. I think, you know, architecture has always been one of those professions where, you know, people are always striving to, you know, create new types of business relationships, create new types of organizations. They're always on the cutting edge for that type of thing. And I think, in particular, the economy over the last several years has dictated an even broader range of experiences because, you know, standard firms are consolidating. You know, clearly there were some layoffs at times, and people were trying to get creative about how to get some experience under their belt. And so we started to hear more things about independent contractors or consultant work or, you know, just various arrangements. And again, it all comes back to that direct supervision. Another element of direct supervision is that the supervisor has control, quote unquote, over the work of the intern. So regardless of what the employment scenario is, whether that intern is paid, you know, to come in once or twice a week or once or twice a month or to work from home on a certain project only, all that type of stuff, it certainly counts and NCARB's not terribly worried about it so long as the supervisor has direct control over the work of the intern. You know, NCARB never goes in and looks at the specific organizational books of a firm and tries to figure out exactly how that works. That's beyond the scope of NCARB. They just want to know, again, that there is a direct control relationship over what the intern is doing and the supervisor is seeing. With that said, one of the things that NCARB specifically doesn't allow is when somebody is essentially establishing their own firm and providing design services, you know, to an architect or to another professional, But it's beyond that kind of, you know, that freelance or independent contractor scenario. If you have your own firm and you're operating your own business in a way, you're essentially in control of your own work. You make your own decisions, and essentially the architect or whoever you might be working for is a client. So that's when things get a little bit more gray, and NCARB tends to not accept those types of scenarios because, again, that control factor is not there. Ultimately, if you own your own business, you're in control of your own work. So I realize that that may create a little bit of a gray area, and it's not as crystal as it should be. But, again, it all comes down to that control factor and how that fits into direct supervision.
Yeah, that's very interesting because there is a difference between that, between somebody who is technically an intern but is remote and can be paid as a consultant, doesn't need to be paid as an employee. They can take care of their own taxes on their income that they earn, but they can't have their own business. They can't be incorporated or have an LLC and working with many different architects and doing different things, and that internship relationship is just one of the many things that they're doing where they have total control over their own business and their own work. That's not acceptable. But somebody who is just working towards their licensure and they live in California and I'm here in New York, and I pay them for the hours they work and they send me a bill, and I send them a check, that seems to be fall within the direct supervision, and I have control over what they're doing based on what I'm assigning them to do. So,
Mark, that's about as clear as I've ever heard it enunciated. So he should get on an NCARB webinar because that's about as a good description as I've ever heard.
Good. I'm glad we talked about that because that's something that comes up in my community quite often because they're all small firms, many of them sole proprietors. Many of them want to give back to the profession and help the interns come through the profession and grow. And just, yeah, including myself, you know, now with this new situation I have, you know, it's something that we want to work out and see if we can have an intern or two work with us remotely. So that's not an invitation to send me 10,000 requests for internship, but it is something that we're going to be looking at in the future. So I thank you for that information. I would say just one last thing on IDP. From your current position as an executive now at AIAS, no longer involved intimately with IDP, what would you say is sort of the greatest weakness that IDP needs to work on, and what is the greatest strength going forward that IDP should continue?
Wow, Mark, you're going to have to let me pause for a second on that one.
And if I put you in an awkward position, you don't have to answer them.
No, not at all. That's what I'm here to do, and you know, it's not my role anymore. So that it's an interesting point. So let's start with the strengths, because I think that even though at times you know there's an administrative quality to it, and there's a paperwork quality to it, and people get frustrated by just the natural regulatory nature of how it all works, I think the standardization of topics and the overall direction that it gives is hugely beneficial. And that's not just my perspective. That's actually sometimes what I hear from people who are genuinely participating in a lot of the volunteer efforts at NCARB. Even at the intern level, particularly something called the Intern Think Tank, which NCARB holds every year for people going through the process, the feedback that they receive from that is that, you know, a lot of the structure and the direction that IDP provides is actually good, because otherwise you get into an office and you kind of just get through, you know, you start going through the day-to-day activities and you dive into a project, but you don't really think about all the different elements that you need to know to learn and grow and make sure you get to a certain, you know, a certain competency level. And so, again, for strengths, I would say that direction and that structure is needed, and particularly given the variety of operations and firms and project types that happen, you know, some structure is just the best. And NCARB, you know, to give them some positive feedback here, the increase in their digital strategy and their ability to, you know, have interns engage online, even through the supervisor intern process, the apps that they use for IDP now, all of those things make the administrative side less of a burden. So I guess that would be my greatest strength. And you know, in terms of weakness, there's never going to be a best way to do something. I wish that a lot of the pieces and parts of IDP could more easily be acquired during school and through academia. I mean, thinking about IDP is allowed to happen in school, but sometimes it's just hard to do because you're coming out only for a summer internship. You're not getting the depth of experience over the 2 or 3 months in the summer that you would get in a normal full-time employment scenario. So I wish that IDP could be further integrated into academia in some way. And I think that that's certainly, the goal towards that licensure upon graduation model. But I just remember myself coming out of school and, not having had a lot of chance to dive much into the IDP. And I wish that it had just been a natural integration. So I hope that can just expand and happen more as IDP evolves. In terms of what IDP is and rules and regulations and what topics it covers, that stuff is always going to change. It's always going to evolve, and frankly, I think it should. I would hope that it doesn't stay stagnant. There's been some critique among a variety of parties that things change too much, and it's hard for interns and even supervisors to keep up. But I think, that's a quality of a responsive program. And, that's a testament to the profession and, NCARB as well, that, they're looking at the reality of modern day practice. And if modern day practice changes, so should the licensure process. So again, to summarize, I think, the strengths are the direction and the structure it provides. And the weakness is that right now it's just difficult to do a lot of it in school. And I wish that some way, the academic and professional world can kind of combine to make it a little bit easier to graduate with some more professional skills in hand.
Yeah, I think that was an excellent answer. I think that the integration of the intern program with the profession, that it's just part of the process of becoming an architect and it's not really the separate thing that you need to get through, would be a great asset to the profession. There's a great book called Mastery by Robert Greene. And he writes about how, and he has many examples of how masters became masters. And he talks about that there's this process to become a master, that there is an apprenticeship that has to happen. And an apprenticeship typically needs to take 10 years. And so if you think about it from an architect's point of view, you go to school and then you have this internship and then there's a few years after your internship that you're still learning the profession and you kind of putting in all those pieces together. And that's about 10 years worth of time between, starting school and getting through your IDP and doing those additional years of just learning what you need to learn to become an architect. And I'm not talking about licensure. I'm talking about, the apprenticeship of architecture. And then there's this period of time that I'm in where you take what you learn and you start practicing it and you become this in the terms of an apprentice, you'd be the journeyman. Now you go out and you do the work. You have this education and you learn your skills and you go out and you start honing your skills and you become very good at it. And then at a certain point, you become a master, and the master is somebody who's really good at what you're doing. You have a tremendous skill in what you're doing, and then you go back and you teach the apprentices. So you're looking for an apprentice to help with you as a master, and the master is helping the apprentice. That this symbiotic relationship. I would recommend that book to everybody, to both students as well as professionals, because I think many students, as did I, looked at this internship as this thing that you just needed to get through to become an architect. And I think that if you looked at it more from the perspective of an apprenticeship, that school is a process that you're going through to become an architect, and the IDP program is just a way to regulate and to document the process of an internship once you get out of school. But that's not the apprenticeship. The apprenticeship is the work that you're doing and the relationships that you have with these professionals and the things that you learn. And the business skills, from my point of view, that you need to learn through that internship and that apprenticeship. Because when you get out of the apprenticeship phase and you become an architect and you become a licensed, all of those things that you've learned and you've experienced and the relationships you've built is what will take you to those next levels. And IDP should not be a hurdle. It should just be a way to document what you're doing. But the apprenticeship should be the internship.
Yeah, Mark, I couldn't agree more. I think that was very well said. I think you're right. A lot of people see internship and the whole licensure process as almost a roadblock or a firewall that they just kind of got to get through. And really, there are some fantastic opportunities to learn, to grow as a professional through it. So I think if you take that mindset and you really try to use it as, you know, a launching pad, that's something that's going to actually benefit you, and that you're going to reach back and think about that experience and use it as a reservoir to kind of, you know, inform and guide your future, I think, you know, is the best way to do it. When you look at it as a roadblock, it just becomes, you know, it becomes something that you see as a hassle and you're not as engaged in it, and maybe you don't get as much out of it. But if you look at it as something that's actually going to help you and pay dividends, you know, years on down the road, and maybe it's a different perspective you take. And, you know, maybe not only do you have a better internship, but maybe you get through it faster just because you're more engaged and motivated.
Yeah. It's I think a lot of it, you know, much as is life, you know, it's the way you look at it, and the perspective you have as you try to move on in your life. So this has been great. Nick, thank you very much for your time here today. You're Nick Surface, right, on Twitter?
Yep, at Nick Surface.
And it's NickSurfass. So if you want to connect with Nick on Twitter, is there any better way to connect with you if people listening wanted to say thank you for your time today?
No, actually, Twitter is the best way. I think there's a certain elegance to 140 characters that I love. I wish I could change my email to 140 characters only. So, Twitter's great. I love it, and it's fun. So, let's do that.
Yeah, that's a great way to connect. And anybody who's not on Twitter should be on Twitter and connect with Nick, and you can connect with me at Entree Architect. Nick, thanks so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to chat with me here today on the podcast. It's really, really been a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks again, Mark, for having us. And again, our end-of-the-year conference is at the end of December in Nashville this year. We're hoping it's going to be, you know, an excellent lineup. And for all the professionals listening, if you're interested in coming or participating, please reach out and let us know. We're real excited about it. It might get a little loud, too, in Nashville.
It should be great. I mean, it was fantastic in Chicago. I can only imagine the vibe of Nashville mixed in with those students. It's going to be a special event. So thank you very much, Nick, for spending your time with us.
Absolutely. Thanks again, Mark. I appreciate being on the show, and can't wait to interact with you guys more at Entree Architect.
This episode of the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast was brought to you by Entrepreneur Architect Academy. Entrepreneur Architect Academy is a community of like-minded entrepreneur architects seeking to take their small firms to greater success. You may be the average of the five people with whom you surround yourself, and this is an opportunity to be part of a group of professionals who are determined to take their business, their lives, and their leadership to the next level. If you're interested in learning more about Entrepreneur Architect Academy, please visit entrearchitect.com/academy. And if you like this episode, please go to iTunes and leave a review. This is how you may help me spread the word about Entrepreneur Architect and our mission to become an influential force in this profession. Go to Entrepreneur Architect at entrearchitect.com/iTunes, or just go to iTunes and search for Entrepreneur Architect. You'll find me. This week, I received one new review, bumping our number up to 54. We're still shooting for 100 before the new year. But I'm getting a little scared of whether I'm going to actually hit that. I'm only halfway there, and I only have 2 months left. So if you have not yet reviewed the podcast, please go do that. EntreeArchitect.com/iTunes. That'll take you there. This week's review was from Billy Ware. Billy Ware is a member of the Entrepreneur Architect Academy. Thank you very much, Billy, for the review. It says, must listen for architects who run a business. Mark shares his insights and thoughts along with interviewing others who have walked the path. I love his balance of work and the rest of life. He is a wealth of knowledge and an encouragement to me and to those who listen. His podcasts are directly applicable to our business today. I thank him for taking the time out to make our profession better. Mark, keep on going. I look forward to many more podcasts. I am an entrepreneur architect. Yes, you are, Billy. Thank you very much for that great review. And please go do that if you have not reviewed. The more reviews I get, the more people that learn what we're doing here, and the better the profession is going to be. So that is a wrap on this most important episode, number 50. Yes, that's 50 episodes since I started this thing back in December of 2012 on 12-12-12. Thank you for all your continuous support and encouragement. Keep spreading the word about what we're doing here. Every week we grow and every week we become more influential. We will become an influential force in this profession. Change is being made and you are a part of this mission. So thank you very much. Until next week, my name is Mark R. LePage and I am an entrepreneur architect. Thank you very much for listening and spread the word.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure, and when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns. What's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.